Hi, this is Jen Zaman, and you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jamie. Host Elisa Breitenbach talks in the second of three interviews with Christy DiMaggio to address the multitude of ways the legal system has worked to destroy her credibility, her mental health, and give her son to her abuser. Today, they will talk about how her lawyer took advantage of her when she was most vulnerable. Then, host Teresa Wilkie talks with Scott Mason, Director of Donor Stewardship and Marketing for the Rose Brooks Center, about their mission, their programs, and how the public can help them protect abused women and children. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Now, here is Elisa and her guest.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for listening to our show today. The Center of Disease Control states that one of the most complex and misunderstood threats to our society today and that we have to deal with is intimate partner violence, domestic violence, family violence, whatever you want to call it. Children who are exposed to domestic violence live shorter lives and suffer more illnesses and injuries throughout their lives, is what a recent report by the Centers of Disease and Control and Prevention has to say. A study known as the Sanders Report was commissioned by the U.S. Department of Justice. It finds that most judges, lawyers, and evaluators in custody actions who have never had domestic violence training often side with the abuser, because they usually don't have training, they get manipulated by the abuser. Then because the mother who's emotionally and angry, which is a normal way for anyone to act, of course, they look at her as being irrational, and this is how we end up with harmful outcomes to children. Today we have Christy DiMaggio, who has experienced how Jackson County court system has handled her domestic violence case. And she has no history of drugs, no alcohol abuse, no history of neglect or child abuse, yet her son lives with his father, who not only has sole custody of him, he has a lengthy criminal record. Welcome, Christy, to Jaws of Justice, and this is part two.
Hi, Elisa. Thank you for having me back again.
I'm glad that you're back. Last time we spoke about how you were in this abusive relationship for 4 years and how you had first been abused when you actually conceived your son, and how he actually threatened to cut the baby out of you, and he said he was going to watch you die. This guy's been twice convicted of assaulting you, and yet he has your child.
Yep. You know, as we went over in our last interview, there was a lengthy history of domestic violence involved with my ex and I, my son's father and I. Not only did I finally successfully convict him twice of assault, he had two prior assaults, two that were from two separate women, and a multitude of police reports that I've been able to dig up through the county that he lives in with his current wife on assaults. You know, my issue with this is that when I first lost custody of my son, I really thought that this story was unique, that, you know, I was the only mother in the history of abused women that had lost custody of her child. It wasn't until I had gone through all of this trauma with dealing with the legal system and my lawyer that I realized a lot of women that are in abusive relationships and have exes with lengthy, you know, history of domestic violence, that these abusers are winning custody of the children. And there's a lot of power play involved in it. And I know firsthand in my situation, you know, part of the issue that I was having was the lawyer that I had retained. He came referred from Hope House, which is a local Jackson County battered women's shelter, came highly recommended through Hope House. And it was shortly after I retained him that he began, you know, pretty inappropriate conversations, emails, and text messages with me that eventually led into a relationship. And ultimately, when I decided to end that relationship and kind of come forward with, you know, the things that he was doing to me, I was realizing that I was being re-victimized all over again by my lawyer. By that point, he had already gotten us in front of a judge that he was, you know, quote, friends with, got us a guardian ad litem that he was best friends with. So at this point, I felt like I was really going up against the good old boys club. And, you know, I documented a lot, have a lot of documentation.
Yes, you do.
And
I've seen it.
Ultimately, you know, when I went up against him and the system and the good old boys club, basically, I was just deemed unstable. I had no credibility. I was a liar. I had, you know, mental illness. You know, I had no history of any of this. We had taken psych evals, and, you know, I had produced all of my medical records from the past. And the only thing that I had ever been diagnosed with over the course of any court proceedings was anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, being in an abusive relationship for many years was very traumatic. So finally getting out of that relationship and then finding an attorney that was fighting, I thought, so hard for my case was, you know, I was just being re-traumatized all over again. And while I was trying to heal from that trauma of that abusive relationship and then going through a modification, a custody issue with my son, you know, I realized that the trauma that I had experienced really demanded the respect and knowledge that my lawyer was licensed to provide. And ultimately, you know, he was coming to my house. He was sending me inappropriate text messages and emails. He was helping with yard work. He was shoveling my driveway when I was out of town, you know, calling me all hours of the night, seeing how my day was, telling me how hard this case was on him. You know, but ultimately I ended up losing my son because I wasn't willing to be in a relationship with him anymore. I really, my main goal, you know, being on the show today is to let other women know that if they've been in a situation like this with their lawyer, that they've been taken advantage of, or they've gotten into a sexual relationship, or they're feeling cornered by their lawyer's actions, that they have to stand up, they have to speak out, they have to say something, they have to start documenting every single thing, and they need to come forward. You know, a lot of women are losing custody of their children to their abusers because we have a system that's set up. You know, it's the good old boys club. These lawyers are in a position of power, and they're pretty much preying on weak and vulnerable women just getting out of these relationships. And, you know, I feel like just like kind of what's going on in Hollywood right now, you know, a lot more women are coming forward and speaking up about issues that they've had with men in power positions. So I just want a lot of women to understand out there that there is help, there is hope. There's the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel. You know, you've got to make complaints about these lawyers. You've got to start speaking up about any injustice that is happening within the legal system, and be heard.
And since you mentioned that, the Kansas City Star did an extraordinary series all week long on the secrecy of what is going on in the state of Kansas. And they are asking for anyone that has had any problems with any part of the system, not being able to get the answers that they were looking for in a court system or whatever government entity that you're dealing with in the state of Kansas, they want your story. And I will put that on our Facebook page of Jaws of Justice later on today. The most important thing we can do is document. Christy, you've done an incredible job of that.
Yes.
I've actually read every word of your binder, the police report binder, which is like over 1,000 pages long. All of your pictures I've looked at, all of your, just everything. It's just amazing. This man has 6 previous convictions that include assault, tax evasion, unlawful use of a weapon when he's a convicted felon, and numerous traffic violations on dozens of occasions with the police. And he's been called on domestic violence problems involving 4 different women that I know of. He's tested positive for cocaine, amphetamines, and marijuana. And he's caused a disturbance at the Office of Probation and Patrol that required an employee to sound the building alarm bell. And your son's stepmother's children cannot even have any kind of contact with him. He's not allowed nothing but supervised visitation with his other child that lives in St. Louis, but yet he has sole custody of your child. His past behavior has, one police officer stated it the best, his past behavior will only predict his future behavior. One of the most important things that anyone that's getting involved with someone intimately, what you can do to check somebody out is go to casenet.com. It is amazing what you can find out about individuals on casenet.com. And Christy is right. You need to just document everything that you possibly can. Keep a journal. When you keep a journal, it must be a journal that's like a spiral notebook so that you can't take the pages in and out, or it doesn't stand up in a court of law. It needs to be a spiral, and you need to just document what is happening. You need to take as many pictures, do recordings of videos and sound recordings on your phone. Christy's done an extraordinary job of that. She's got it also documented. One question I do have for you, though, that really troubles me is after you had this problem with your attorney, and that particular attorney was actually given to you by a battered women's shelter here in Kansas City. What did the battered women's shelter do after they found out that information?
I remember that day very clearly. I went and discussed the situation with them the day that I lost custody of my son, and obviously, I was pretty distraught. the night before I lost custody at a hearing is when my attorney decided to withdraw from my case. You know, I had told him our relationship needed to stick to just purely professional. There was going to be no more emails, no more coming to my house, no more mowing my lawn or shoveling snow for my driveway. I needed the relationship to end. And he got off my case. He withdrew from my case the next day in court, and it was during that court hearing that I advised the judge of the inappropriate relationship, and they pretty much just said, "You're crazy. You know, you have no credibility. This is absolutely, you know, you're lying, and we're not going to stand for it." So I went back to Hope House and met with them and told them, you know, what had transpired over the last 6 or 7 months, and that, you know, I had felt victimized again by the system, you know, not by my ex anymore, but now by my lawyer that they had referred me to. After I had given them the whole story of everything that had been going on, they basically told me there's nothing that they were going to be able to do. That was not a lawyer that was actually working for Hope House. They just referred me to him. And they suggested that I schedule an appointment with my therapist. They thought that I needed to probably get in to see my therapist. So that was how they handled that. You know, since that time, I've just kind of been fighting the system, still fighting to, you know, gain custody of my son. And just, you know, spread my story and let other women know that, again, if you are in a situation where you are being victimized by your lawyer, you need to come forward. You need to start putting together all the documentation you can, because there's going to be a lot of backlash. You are going up against the good old boys club, but I do believe in numbers and the power. The more women that can come forward, the better. I do know after my story came out a few years ago with the pitch that I was contacted by several women via Facebook that this particular lawyer had done this to them too, and you know, just other women that had come forward with their stories of being victimized by their lawyers. They have to know that they need to speak up. Again, just document. In Missouri, we have the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel that you can make a complaint that will be looked into. And you just have to document.
And the scandalous action really does need to be adequately treated and addressed for the sake of justice for everyone in the courtroom. Yes. Something I found years ago was that when you go to there was one battered women's shelter in Johnson County that informed the ladies that they were not any longer allowed to address what attorneys they were using, what therapists they were going to, basically because everybody was starting to put all the dots together, and the same people were victimizing the women in the battered women's shelter. And so basically they were handed this letter. I have the letter in my hand still today. And four ladies stood up and said, if we cannot discuss who is harming us in our cases, we no longer need to come to this therapy group. Obviously, this isn't what we need. We need to try to find justice. I'm sure all battered women's shelters don't work that way, but this particular one did. The district attorney was one of the directors of the shelter. And so it just made it very difficult for justice to really happen when he was playing his little shenanigans years ago. Your attorney, he actually got your GAL appointed to your case. And a quote from him was, we're going to stick it to your ex even more. That's what he told you, because he said that she was a really good friend of his. And through documentation, with all of your expert witnesses, this one expert witness wrote the most scathing report against this GAL. She said that your expert witness stated, in her opinion, that the GAL continued to not meet the obligations of your son and in his best interest, and medical interest was not being met. She said, it's in my opinion that based on the objective medical records and court testimony, that this situation with this minor child is unsafe, continues to be unsafe, and not conducive for further growth and development in a safe environment for this child. And the GAL was referring to a forensic interview that your GAL wouldn't even allow to be done on your son. Just totally amazing.
Yeah, the situation with the GAL is a whole nother show. And unfortunately, as many people probably know, if they've been through any sort of custody modification or dealing with the court system for custody issues, the GAL can charge whatever they want. They can say whatever they want. They're immune from any sort of action held against them because they're court-appointed. And in this case, because my lawyer and the guardian ad litem were very close, you know, obviously after he withdrew from my case and I went after his character, they did everything they could to try to destroy mine without any thought that really the only person that they're hurting is an innocent four-year-old boy who I had been his primary caregiver. You know, I'd always been in his life. His dad, you know, was continually abusive to him even after he gained full sole custody. And nobody ever cared about all of these medical records, all of this documentation that I had from my son. They just wanted to say, I made it all up. That's why I ended up hiring the the forensics nurse to go over all of the medical records that my son had and really take a look and say, you know, what do you see here? You know, is mom crazy or is the system trying to discredit mom? So
really,
I've actually met with our state senator a few times to discuss possibly changing the Missouri statutes to at least make it possible that you can file a complaint with the disciplinary council against a guardian ad litem, because so many guardian ad litems are overlooking and choosing sides and really not paying attention to the best interests of the child. And that's who they're supposed to be protecting. And it's really sad that a lot of them just aren't. They're playing favorites. And, you know, I could care less if the guardian ad litem liked me. I needed her to pay attention to what was in the best interest of my son. And for him to be placed in the hands of an abusive man who not only abused me, but continued to and continues to abuse my son, there's nothing I can do about it.
And,
you know, I can file complaints with Child Protective Services, and they basically go unheard because, hey, I've got a court judgment that says I'm crazy, I have no credibility, and dad has sole custody, so I must just be out of my mind.
And how sane would anybody?
I'm not the only one that this has happened to.
Of course not. There's just so many people. How sane could anybody be knowing that your child's with the very person that abused you on every level known to mankind, and then add to that the very system that's set in place to protect you and to protect your innocent child is abusing and harming him more than what you could ever even imagine. Christy, you would like to see a national domestic violence registry, much like what we have for sex offenders. Let's talk about that, because I think that's an awesome thing for us to be looking into and for helping us make it a safer place for all women who and men that date, so that they could know that there's this domestic problem that these people have. You want to red flag them so that you know that you'll be warned, basically.
Yes. So, I mean, just like CaseNet, you know, in Missouri, you can go on CaseNet and pretty much find anything on anybody through any county in the state. Unfortunately, my ex has two convictions that are out of Yavapai County, Arizona, and Maricopa County, Arizona. So unless you know that exact county website to look up information, nobody in Missouri would ever know that he has two convictions out of another state. What I'm proposing is a repeat domestic violence offender registry, three or more convictions, and you're going on the site. I think it's very important, and I think a lot of women that are in abusive relationships know, and statistics show, that it takes a lot for a woman to actually convict her abusive partner. So I think the three convictions is even kind of a little too much, you know. I feel like it should be one. But ultimately, I do believe that a repeat domestic violence offender registry is what's needed nationwide, not just through our state, but a place where women and men and mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles can go and look and find the history of someone that's a potential partner. I really think that that's important. So I'll be working on that next.
I just admire your courage and your strength to continue moving forward, because you have truly lived a nightmare. And something that may be able to help somebody that's listening to our radio show, there was a lady whose name was Susan Murphy Milano. Susan Murphy Milano did some incredible books for people. It's on guides on how to leave and survive abuse and stalking relationships. And I would encourage anyone and everyone to get your hands on her book if you are in a domestic violence type situation, because it is dangerous when you leave someone that's very violent and you have a child and you have to worry about, do I want to go ahead and leave? Because if I do, I could lose my child. I say put your track shoes on, darling, and run as fast as you can. Thank you for allowing us to do this show with you, Christy. And we'll have part three soon.
Thank you very much, Elisa. You have a good day.
Thank you.
Now, the calendar for November 20th. Voices of the People are hosting the 11th Annual Community Thanksgiving Dinner to be held Wednesday, November 22nd from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Brush Creek Community Center, 3801 Emmanuel Cleaver II Boulevard, KCMO. All are welcome to attend. If you would like to volunteer, you can contact Representative Ellington's office at 573-751-3129 or email at brandon.ellington@house.mo.gov. Primitivo Garcia was an immigrant going to night school to better himself when he gave his life to protect his teacher from a robbery and assault. The Garcia family and friends, along with the Kansas City metro area community, are all invited to join in honoring the legacy of a true hero on the 50th anniversary of his passing, Saturday, November 25th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Primitivo Garcia Elementary, 1000 West 17th Street, KCMO. My name is Jamie, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. Coming up next is Teresa Wilkie with Scott Mason of the Rose Brooks Center.
Good morning. This is Teresa Wilkie. We're lucky to have Scott Mason with us today. He's from the Rose Brooks Center in Kansas City, Missouri. Scott is Director of Marketing. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Well, Frank, thanks for having me.
We're delighted to tell people about options if you or anyone you know is involved in an experience of domestic violence. In the Kansas City, Missouri area, we have a wonderful organization, the Rose Brooks Center. And Scott, when did Rose Brooks begin?
You know, we began 39 years ago as a hotline, and a year later opened our physical shelter. So a group of volunteers saw a need, and that's how it all began 39 years ago.
I should think anyone who's involved in law enforcement in the Kansas City area and any of our listening areas, communities, because domestic violence is a chronic call. Every day it would come up where there is a need for people to address the conditions that can be created in home life. And so I thank you at Rose Brooks for doing that. So there is a shelter?
There is. In 1979, we opened our doors because of Rosa Brooks left her home to be the first shelter here. And, you know, it's grown over the years, but we do have, back then we started with 19 beds, and it grew quickly, and now we're 100 beds for families who are escaping domestic violence, and with an on-site pet shelter so that they can bring their family pets with them. If about 40% of families won't leave their domestic violence situation without their pet. So we opened that in 2012, and it's been absolutely amazing. We actually serve and support about 14,000 individuals every year, just because we have such an outreach of with our community partners as well and community education, which, you know, we can talk a little bit about. But our calling card definitely is our 100-bed shelter.
I think Rose Brooks organization is one of only two shelters in the entire United States that also provide a safe haven for families and their pets. And I see the logic in that. I really commend your organization for being responsive to that, because when we have a situation of domestic bullying and domestic violence, a person, the perpetrator of the abuse, might be abusive to a spouse, to a child, and certainly they will kick the dog.
Yeah, they will actually use, a lot of times it's very common for them to use something that you care for as a tool for power and control, and that includes children, and that includes the pets as well. And I should say that there are more than two that have a pet shelter, but we're one of about 3% in the entire United States that have an on-site pet shelter. So it is rare, and as you said, it's very needed.
I am very proud of you for setting the example for all shelters, because pets are so valuable to our families, and it's just a great effort. So yeah. I commend you for that. So we're talking about the Rosebrook Shelter in the Kansas City, Missouri area, and I want listeners to be aware that you can access Rosebrook's information at rosebrooks.org, and you have a hotline number?
We do. It's 816-861-6100.
816-861-6100. Thank you for that. So that's 24 hours?
It is. It is. We speak to about 9,000 people a year on that hotline.
Listeners, if you are feeling that you would like to talk to someone about your living situation, or if you're aware of anyone, friends and family, please feel free to give Rose Brooks a call. I wanted to reach out a little bit and talk about the greater Kansas City area. We know, Scott, that in the Lawrence area, there's a domestic violence hotline and shelter, and that's called the Willow, W-I-L-L-O-W. That number is 785-843-3333. In the Kansas City, Kansas area, the shelter is called Friends of Yates, Y-A-T-E-S, and their hotline number is 913-321-0951. So, Scott, tell us about some of the services that Rose Brooks provides for victims of domestic violence.
Sure, absolutely. As it's made clear, we have our shelter and we have our pet shelter. We also have an on-site health clinic that we also, we've always had great partnership with Goppert Trinity. They've volunteered their services and other physicians then will come in and provide health care for our families. But we opened an official clinic in 2013, so that's on site as well. And that's just been a great resource to them. We also have a children's program that is, you know, most people don't realize that, you know, anywhere to 40 to 50% of our residents are kids. So we have a very robust children's program, which includes, you know, play therapy and groups and therapy. And then groups in the summertime as well. And then we have economic empowerment, which means we have an individual who works with job skills, resumes, helping them identifying the right questions in an interview. And then they also work with employers to educate them about why someone might have a spotty work history because of them either not going to work because of isolation or maybe a bruise and they're not going to go to work. So somebody who's been in a violent home oftentimes will have a spotty work history. And so she works really tirelessly to educate employers on that.
I'm so glad you said something about that, Scott. Listeners, you've got to be aware of the need we have to be kind to each other. If you have a coworker who's late to work, you might notice that there are blemish, a scarf around the neck, makeup covering spots, some swelling, and there wouldn't be any talk about that because of the great reticence of a victim of domestic violence to speak about this. We all just need to have better understanding of how this happens, the spiral people can find themselves in, yeah, when it's happening, this is what they're used to. And in a domestic situation, there's love there too. Mm-hmm. And so that speaks back to your medical services. Do you provide counseling for people?
Absolutely, yeah. Therapy for sure. And that doesn't mean that if you're, just for those that are in shelter, I mean, we have outreach, and so individuals will come to us for therapy. And they will come to groups while they're still in their abusive relationships, you know, just to better understand what's going on, what's happening. And like you said, there's shared love there. I mean, abusive relationships don't start out on day one, oftentimes being abusive. There's shared love. There's children. There's shared resources. It's complex. And so we understand that. And that's why we have those services to help them identify it themselves as well. I mean, when somebody engages with us, we're never going to tell them they have to leave their relationship. That is their choice. That is, and you know, and for those, when you mentioned earlier to call our hotline, absolutely use us as a resource and talk to our advocates. And we are there to listen and provide you resources. Don't ever be afraid that we're going to say, hey, you need to leave that relationship. You know, we're just going to help you identify what's going on and support you.
This is a place people can call and have some understanding in this sphere of domestic abuse. And it happens to, families are potentially just a stressful area. There's economic issues, mm-hmm. there's relationship issues. Certainly it can be an issue to raise children.
Sure.
They're not easy either. And so if you find that you or anyone you know is in this spiral, the Rose Brook Center Therapy Services is very good about mapping out what we would call PTSD, the dynamics of the trauma and the stress for persons that are find themselves in these domestic situations where the abuse is coming from someone you love. It can be physical, and it's very emotional as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and it's, look, we should make very clear that domestic violence in the relationship is, those dynamics can be extremely complex. It can be crazy making when you're in the middle of it and thinking, why is what my partner is telling me, why does it seem hurtful? Why does it seem disrespectful? And I'm always kind of walking on eggshells or worrying about what I'm going to say. And, there's so many levels to domestic violence, and it's so important to kind of wrap your own head around kind of the situation that you're in. And when you mentioned earlier, you know, if you're at work and you notice that you're an employee or your employees or your
coworkers,
about late to work or whatever their behavior is, you know, I know it can be scary to ask about their relationship. And what I often tell people is just begin to make statements that makes it clear that you are a safe and non-judgmental person. Making statements like, I hope I'm never in an abusive relationship, and boy, that would be a horrible thing, and that would be awful, and this is what a relationship should feel like. You know, you can bring up conversations in a way that are completely non-threatening if you're really uncomfortable about asking about if they're in an abusive relationship. That's hard to do.
I like people at work to talk about giving to charities. And I'm a federal employee, and so I took the time to look up the Combined Federal Campaign CFC code for the Rose Brooks organization. That's 94003. And that's a good transition, Scott, for us to say a few words about how we can support the Rose Brooks mission. What are some of your upcoming events?
You know, we actually have a holiday store that we do every year for our families in shelter and in our housing program as well. And so individuals will go to our website and look at our needs list for the holiday store, and they will shop and drop off at the Ward Parkway Center, which is where our holiday store is. So it's December 4th, I think, is when it begins this year. And so people love to do that. I mean, it provides gifts for our families who are displaced and scared and not at home and not able to be with their families. And so we bring all of those gifts back to the shelter, and the moms get to shop for the kids. And then we put some gifts in the children's department for the kids to come through and shop for their moms. And it's a wonderful time.
Listeners, this is a very good way to give toys for children. And the holiday store is at 8600 Ward Parkway, December 4th through December 8th at 10 a.m.
December 18th.
Oh, December 18th. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. That's and so do these need to be wrapped or?
No, we have wonderful volunteers that wrap those for us. So
well, that's fun too. So
that's
people
right.
can if your talents are gift wrapping, that's that would be very much fun too. So and that provides gifts for people who might be in shelter during Christmas. The big event of the Rosebrook Center is the cabaret. And this year, Scott, who's your guest?
The one and only Vanessa Williams. So we're very excited about that.
I just think that is very exciting personally, too. Kudos to you. This is your 30th anniversary cabaret. This event will be on February 25th at the Sheridan Crown Center, 2345 McGee, mm-hmm. at 5 p.m. So, good.
Yeah. It's our 31st. Last year was our 30th. We had Vince Gill and Amy Grant, so that was just as wonderful. But it's a great event for us, and it provides funding for us that we can't get through grants and federal money and individuals. So our events are really important to us.
Well, it's also just a good way to interact and work with each other and reward each other,
absolutely.
Our entire community people, for the good work that goes in being kind to each other. The cabaret is a ticketed event, and information about the tickets are on your website, which is?
Correct. Yep. You can go to rosebrooks.org/cabaret.
Rosebrooks.org. And then last but not least, and I personally think this is a very clever event, you have an annual casino night. Tell us about that.
We do. People love casino night. It's an evening for folks just to come together. And so we have a company called Jackson Aces that brings in all their casinos, tables and their dealers. And so we give you $2,000 of play chips to win prizes and gamble and hoop and holler, and then there's also a silent auction, and then we'll have dinner and a program. But it's a fun event.
So this is a ticketed event, and information about the tickets is on the website. It's a fundraiser for the Rosebrooks Shelter. That event will be September the 8th at 5 p.m. at Sheridan Overland Park, 6100 College Boulevard in Overland Park, Kansas. It's gambling for real, but for fake.
That's right.
Very well done. Just it lets you see your skill at gambling. If you're the kind of person that would never go with your real money.
That's right. It removes all intimidation. Whether or not you think you're good at blackjack or craps, you can play, and there's no pressure.
I think that's a wonderful event. So let's go back and talk more about your services, what the money goes for. We were discussing the fact you have an emergency shelter, mm-hmm. you have programs for children, you do economic advocacy where you help victims of domestic violence get back on their feet, find employment, learn how to find employment and develop their skills. You have therapy services. Then there's the Rosebrook Center Bridge Program. Can you say a few words about that?
Sure. It's our hospital-based program. So we are in 13 hospitals and clinics in Kansas City, and we have advocates that support them during the day. So when somebody comes in to one of our hospitals, whether it's St. Luke's, Truman, Children's Mercy, KU, Research Medical, and any of their associated clinics, They get asked if they feel safe at home, and they get asked some questions about if they have a situation at home that they need support. And so the great thing about that is that the nurse or doctor doesn't have to provide the support. They can refer somebody to, they can refer them to Rose Brooks right away. And that's 24/7. So we have volunteers that go out for us in the evenings and weekends as well. And we are by the patient's side, whether it's 2 a.m. in the afternoon or 2 p.m. in the afternoon or 2 a.m. in the morning, in within 45 minutes. And so we provide them mostly just listening and listening to their story and provide them resources. We can do orders of protection in the middle of the night for them because of our relationship with the court. And then we do follow-ups with them if they approve that. And but it's, we see a little over 1,000 patients through that every year. And then we train the nurses and doctors as well about how to screen and how to identify domestic violence. So it's a great program.
That's a great program. I also see by looking at your website at rosebrooks.org, and let me restate the hotline number for Rose Brooks, everyone. That's 816-861-6100. You have a program called Project Safe. Do you want to explain?
Sure. It's our school-based program. We're in about 26 schools in Jackson County, and we provide classroom education about healthy relationships and community violence and how to provide, providing support for our kids. And that's pre-K through senior high. And then we also do small groups every week with our kids. And then we have therapy. So it's all about removing every barrier, and we go to them. And that program is fantastic. I mean, meeting the emotional needs of the kids like that and building those relationships. We see, improvements in school and attendance. And but that program, we see somewhere around 2,000 kids every year.
It's fabulous. I want listeners to be aware that these are services available for you or people you might know. And if you're interested in volunteering, if you know youth that are interested in volunteering with something like Project Safe, Scott, I believe one of the many problems with domestic violence, it's a psychological situation and it's rather taught. So when parents are subjected to domestic abuse from their mm-hmm. childhood, and then they grow up and have children and subject them to domestic abuse, sure. and it goes on and on and on until something can be done to help it to stop.
Yeah, to break the cycle.
Our
Project Safe program truly is a violence prevention program. So that is why we're talking to those kids about healthy relationships and how to identify those. And you know, they're completely powerless a lot of times in their own homes. Because their parents are in a domestic violence situation. So it is about what is healthy and how to break that cycle. And, you know, and we should say that, you know, kids respond to violence in such different ways. Some will grow up in a home that is violent and they will know that they don't want to repeat that cycle. And then, like you said, there are some that that will repeat that cycle because they see the conflict as normal. They see it as healthy. They see it as a way to have a relationship. So that is why programs like Project Safe are so important to us.
There's a lot of talk in schools these days about bullying. There must be a desire of some people to bully others. It helps them to feel important. It helps them to feel personal power. And the message is, you too can have personal power and feel important by saying no to bullies and to try to help those bullies mm-hmm. to have other ways they can communicate and feel powerful
Absolutely.
In their environment. Yeah. So talk again about this fabulous pet shelter. How long do people get to have their pets with them?
Well, it depends on how long they stay at shelter, honestly. And, it varies for every single individual. It depends on how violent their situation was. Did we have to get them and help them get a new job because it's not safe for them to go back to their job? So a lot of things that you have to work through. But their pets can stay at shelter as long as they do.
And then there's court advocacy programs. In the case that someone is in court on protection orders mm-hmm. and child custody orders, child in need of care orders.
We stand right by them during those order protection hearings, and we advocate for them. We help them understand that they're, you know, there are ways to well support them the entire process. And honestly, being an advocate and standing next to somebody who is standing next to their abuser at a court hearing, it helps deflate the abuser's power, and it's a really important program.
So I want to say one more time about the upcoming events. There's the Holiday Store, which begins December 4th, right around the corner, where people can give gifts. Please, everyone, if you need services or you'd like to offer services, contact Rose Brooks at ORG. And then the cabaret, when is that again, Scott?
It is February 25th, 2018.
And who's your guest star this year?
She loves, say, Vanessa Williams.
That is so highly exciting. we need to show her a big welcome to Kansas City.
That's right.
And last but not least is this very clever casino night. So if you like to gamble and don't want to have to use your money.
That's right.
It's a fun party September the 8th at the Sheraton Overland Park at 5 p.m. It happens every year. So, Scott, I want to thank you very, very much
thank
for
you.
Coming on air and talking with us today.
It's the 420 Drug War News. When I was in Atlanta, I got a chance to speak to Jeff Malansky at the Drug Policy Alliance Conference.
One thing that lies at the heart of why you're here is your, truthfully, life experience. Talk about what happened to you as a young man.
How true. Of course, used cannabis when I was younger, and I had in Missouri, I ended up getting a life sentence, or I should say a life without sentence. In other words, I was supposed to die in prison. Fortunately, people got together and signed petitions and sent them to our governor, and new approach, show me cannabis, and a lot of people out there, press, got together and kept calling the governor, and finally got a computation. Now I'm still on parole, but at least I'm out.
No, I was one of those, and I wouldn't dare say few in the media that was giving your story attention and the respect it deserved.
Well, that was fantastic, because if it wasn't for the media, none of it would have happened whatsoever, because like I say, information is the key, and how else are we going to get it out to the people so that people actually know what's going on? And what's really so sad is we still have over 3,000 men and women in prison, federal and state, right now doing life without for nonviolent crimes. That's a shame.
It is truly a shame and a stain, if you ask me, on our criminal justice system. Jeff, I see you setting a table out here at this convention, Drug Policy Alliance folk. What information are you sharing specifically this time around?
Well, we're trying to share the idea of what's going on with the people in prison, of course, what we can do to help to try to get them out, legalization efforts, and we're getting ready to show a movie called Lifers, and it's about me and other people that have had life sentences that have been in trouble with the law over cannabis, unfortunately, and shows why it's such a crime to be locking up people for a plant.
Well, Jeff, I just sense a change is afoot. People are beginning to recognize the hypocrisy of it all. We have cops stealing drugs from evidence rooms and selling it on the streets, getting minuscule sentences in comparison to what you were subjected to and what thousands of people are subjected to every year here in these United States.
Life without parole, 23 years behind bars for marijuana. We got to end this madness. I am Dean Becker, drugtruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.